It's 4:55 a.m. in Humboldt County, and you're listening to Night Call.
Welcome to Night Call, a podcast for your rain-soaked days and moon-soaked nights. I'm Molly Lambert, and joining me here in Los Angeles is...
Tess Lynch, and guess what? That's all you get today.
That is it!
That's what you get!
Emily Yoshida is in the snow at Sundance.
She's been doing some really good reporting from Sundance on all the movies she liked.
I'm just picturing her waist-deep in snow, trudging between weird branded opportunities.
You have to fill in the gaps because she hasn't been giving us that visual content
it's
that
true.
We require.
I feel like maybe she's also, Emily is a connoisseur of bad branded experiences, but I feel like maybe she's taken a step back this year.
From the branded experience?
From the branded, from the full immersion of the nightmare world.
I'm excited for when she gets back and we can grill her on everything that is no longer embargoed.
Yeah. We were going to talk today about a documentary called Murder Mountain on Netflix. After disparaging true crime documentaries on streaming services, we're going to just talk about one the whole time.
We shan't disparage today.
We shan't disparage because we both loved Murder Mountain. I watched the whole thing and Tess is halfway through. And then we're going to talk about the madness caused by the sea.
Mm-hmm. Which is related to space madness, which I think we've kind of touched on before, but I got super into the idea of sea madness.
Mm-hmm.
And now I know when someone asks if I would rather go to the bottom of the ocean or to outer space, the answer is no longer so clear cut. It's a deep investigation coming up next.
It's a deep dive.
It's a deep dive. Can you tell how silly we're feeling?
We're very silly. Then we're going to talk about food trends.
Yeah.
What's on the way out and what's on... It's called Food Moods. It's a new segment we're debuting today. What's on the way out and what's on the way in? Let's start with Murder Mountain.
Okay. So I am going to go ahead and say that so far I'm enjoying Murder Mountain more than I did the Sun Yat-sen documentary, which I just referenced last week, I believe, when we were talking about if you can leave... cooked dumplings out for hours and hours and hours.
Oh, right. And you said we might give people salmonella.
I'm the only person who's concerned. I've had food poisoning. It's not pleasant. But also, you don't want to eat a cold dumpling.
Yes. But Tessa's main concern about serving food at our live show was that it might give people salmonella and then we would be...
Didn't specifically say salmonella. Did say food poisoning. They're very different
beasts.
Be
like Sheila from Osho giving people...
That's the thing.
But she did it on purpose. We'd
exactly.
be doing it accidentally.
We're not going to do it because I put my foot down and I was like, we're only having Boston cream pie or a cake or something that's shelf stable.
It's crazy that you think Boston cream pie is shelf stable.
It is, because if you put enough sugar in something, it actually acts as a preservative.
For milk?
Yeah.
You're blowing my mind.
No, it's for real, because think about things, like, think about, you know, baked goods that sit out.
I think you get, like, muffins.
I think
it's
have
weird
milk
when they
in
sit
it.
Out.
It is weird,
for so
but
long.
The sugar acts as a preservative. You can't do it forever. But you could do it for a good 24 hours.
This is a great introduction to Murder Mountain, because what makes Murder Mountain a great documentary is that it is about a variety of people who live in Humboldt, California, the weed-growing capital of the world. Maybe America, at least. But it's very rambly and stony and features a wide variety of niche California dirtbag archetypes. I heard about this documentary from Willie Staley of New York Times fame and my brother, Ben Lambert, of Lambo Lambo fame. My brother told me to watch it because he was like, it's a true crime documentary, but it doesn't really get to the point very much.
But in a way, they really have a more compelling ambiance than I'm used to with such rambling stories.
It's very rambling, and everybody who's interviewed, well, there's a lot of old hippies getting interviewed, first of
For
all.
For instance, Douglas Fir.
Yes, there is a gentleman named Douglas Fir. It is about the story of how Humboldt became the weed capital, and the story is essentially like a bunch of hippies moved there as part of the Back to the Land movement in the 70s and built a nonagon-shaped building, a nine-sided building. For some reason that is not made clear, they were like, it had to be a nine-sided building.
It had to be a nonagon.
We all built it together.
We built it naked while wearing, tool belts.
I was saying, there's like a bunch of photos of just like naked hippies. Seems like a very chill atmosphere.
Yeah.
that could not last because then the money started rolling in.
Well, I mean, it's a multi-layered story because I think there's a certain type of man who ages to look exactly like Stephen King does now, where it's like, you know, it's just the untamed eyebrows, the untamed ear hair. It's just a very fuzzy caterpillar looking man. I'm very fond of this archetype. I am.
Everybody was seemed very chill from the old guard. I mean, that is, again, maybe Tess and I are the boomers at heart of this podcast for
totally
sure.
Are.
But we were like very enchanted by the old hippie whose name was Douglas Fir.
Douglas Fir. And then his friend whose name I forget. But Douglas Fir was the most charming. Douglas Fir was the drug smuggler who went to Pakistan.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And he got the seeds and they were sewn into garments and little like jewelry bags and stuff and brought back. But I think all of the old hippies kind of make the distinction of we weren't criminals, we were outlaws. Like, we just wanted to be self-sufficient and we just needed to, like, grow what we needed, and what we really, really needed was a lot of weed.
It kind of starts in the way, like, Wild Wild Country starts, where it's like, we just, like, we were rejecting society and we had to start our own society.
But I could totally understand where they were coming from much more easily than I could with Wild Wild Country.
Oh, I wanted to join the Back to the Land movement immediately and just, like, build nine-sided buildings naked with a bunch of comrades.
Yep.
Seems fun. Grow all your own food. And then they were like, oh, and yes, weed. Yeah. Also one of our foods.
Also a staple of ours. I mean, also, I think they made kind of a good case for the fact that a lot of people who served in Vietnam came back and really didn't feel at home in society, but were kind of just like peaceful, wanted to like live in a community, and they were able to find this like understanding community. And then, of course, everything imploded with the war on drugs.
Right. It's like the idea of the first preppers, of people being like, let's go be self-sufficient and like live off the land. And seemingly it went fine for a little bit. And then, yeah, the war on drugs comes in. I was saying this is a lot like there's the Thomas Pynchon book Vineland is kind of about some of this stuff. This was a great California documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, it's also about like, so it's a true crime documentary, technically.
The true crime element is the fact that, so in the Emerald Triangle, which is this specific area of Humboldt County, in the southern part, there is, I forget what it's actually called, but all of the locals refer to it as Murder Mountain because, I mean, first of all, the geography makes it really impossible to kind of, you know, find people who have been lost. And also people will come up for the harvest season and they already are kind of like drifters a lot of the time.
Yeah, it starts with that there's like an economy of drifters coming in and out to trim weed because it's like a job you can take and like theoretically make a bunch of money in a year or summer or whatever.
But Murder Mountain also has a really heavy like criminal component, and everybody's armed and there are these guys on ATVs with, you know, their own guns. Even when the police come up to Murder Mountain, these like they're almost like security for Murder Mountain will kind of escort the police, and the police are like, no thanks. So the police hate going up there. So it's kind of like this lawless area. But it was interesting because when they interviewed some of the residents, like a lot of the missing persons posters are put up by parents, and like a lot of the people who live up on Murder Mountain are parents. So these two moms were like, oh, hell no, we're going
right.
to find
so a kid
this missing
disappears.
Guy.
That is the true crime element of Murder Mountain, is a kid who went from San Diego.
Ocean Beach.
And it's also like, this was very tragic, but also like interesting because so many true crime documentaries are about missing women, you know, where you see a million pictures of them and maybe some like video footage, but you like never hear their voice. And that was like this, but with a dude. And I was like, oh, I'm so unused to this.
Yeah.
Like I kept waiting to be like, what is this guy like? And then it was just like, he was just a chill SoCal bro.
I don't know. I mean, it sounds like he wasn't like perfect, but
no.
not that anyone needs to be.
But he was so San Diego, and whenever they showed footage of him, for all the stuff they had where there was like a tribute to him, and it was like a Sublime cover band.
Yes,
like,
very Sublime.
It was all very Sublime. And so that was funny to me just because it was not like funny that he was abducted, but funny, but like, there was all this stuff about the NorCal, like, SoCal divide,
right.
You know, where they were like, he didn't understand the culture around here.
Yep. Well, also, it should be noted that Humboldt County, I think, has a higher percentage of missing people than anywhere else in California.
That's what they say also. They're like, people come through all the time and people go missing all the time. So it's very hard if you're like pursuing a specific missing person. They were just like, and it's like a pretty small place, so they only have a sheriff and he's
right.
The department is overextended or whatever. But this documentary also ends up being about the fallibility of the police. And
gotta go to the private investigator.
Yeah, it's about how the cops don't do anything to help.
Yeah, and also, I mean, the divide between the police and the residents is it's obviously pretty intense. I mean, they also showed a town hall where now the people who have been harvesting weed on the black market are trying to go legit, and it's just cripplingly expensive. They're all losing all of their savings, and they're doing it because they want to be able to not feel as though they're, you know, living under this threat that they're constantly going to be exposed and sent to prison or whatever. But it's so prohibitively expensive that they're just risking kind of everything they have. And I think the police have this animosity towards people who are in any way involved in the black market. So they were super dismissive of this guy's dad. They didn't want to help at all. So he had to go to a private investigator, which, by the way, quick pause. Molly, would you ever be a private investigator?
Oh, I think we fantasize about this every day.
Think about it all the time.
Nightcall is a PI firm.
Would you drive around, though, be like, the private investigator?
Yes, the dream.
In this
the
is
Rockford
a great
Files
private
dream.
Investigator.
She is great.
Yeah.
Because that's what happens is then like a cool lady who wants to get to the bottom of things come in. It's just a great assortment of characters.
Yeah.
It's like a big ensemble, which I enjoy.
I loved it. I usually like don't admit this, but I've never been to Northern California. All right. I'm just going to say
I haven't really been
to Northern California.
You must go.
I've been to Napa and that's it.
That counts.
It does, but it was like brief. I mean, it was super brief. I'm so deeply ashamed.
You gotta see the big old trees.
Now I've been to Big Sur, but I've never like really spent any. I mean, I've been here for however many years.
What
20
Tess
years
is trying
of my
to
life.
Say is she's never been to San Francisco.
Yeah, okay, I'm dancing around it. Never been to San Francisco, but I've never like spent any like large chunk of time. I mean, when I went to Big Sur, it was for my honeymoon, so I just kind of like planted myself in a hotel
But you saw the big trees, right?
I did, but it's like I took one walk. You know what I mean? Looking back, I have these pictures, and
isn't
I was like,
that
"There's
what
that one walk."
Miranda on her honeymoon,
exactly.
Sex in the city. She's like, "I gotta get back to work." Wait, I sort of remember this happening to you.
I have pictures on my computer somehow.
You had a problem being off the grid.
Such a huge problem being off the grid. I mean, that's what this documentary really kind of drove home for me on a personal level, was I was like, man, look at them. Like, they're just of the land. Like, when I was out in that same beautiful, majestic redwood forest,
not,
I was like, oh, I don't know. I mean,
they're
like,
not of the land. Because, well, that's what they get to. I mean, first of all, it's all stolen land.
Yeah.
Then they get to like, it's being legalized, which is what is so weird, is then they're like, now it's like this entire industry that's thrived because it's like an outlaw industry is gonna go legit. And there's like the split between the people that embrace legalization and the people that are like, it's rigged. Like,
right.
We got to keep selling it on the black market to the rest of the states that don't have legalized weed still, and we can sell them weed. People say the word outlaw more than I've ever heard anyone say anything.
Oh, it's so much. I know.
They say outlaw and vigilante.
Mm-hmm.
Every other word out of everyone's mouth is like, you got to be an outlaw up here.
But it's like the Waylon Jennings kind of outlaw. It's not like the outlaw. It's a real, like, boomery outlaw that the boomers are talking about.
And that's, like, that's the first thing that happens. Is like, so the hippies who, like, founded the commune and created the weed-growing economy get forced out by this, like, once there's money involved, they get forced out by sort of, like, scary drug dealers.
Yeah.
I was telling my dad about this documentary, and he was like, oh, I knew a woman who, like, moved to Mendocino or whatever to grow weed on a weed farm and then left because she was like, everybody had to sleep with a shotgun at night.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the other really crazy thing about this documentary is they go visit a guy whose last name is Dookie. He's
oh,
a Dookie
God.
Brothers.
Okay, so yeah, there's a secondary storyline about a guy who is like this horrible part of, there's like this, the new generation of weed growers are like the worst.
Yeah.
California, like, ATV.
Maybe it'll be charming later, Molly.
Goatee bros. No, it's so bad. Because that guy, they introduce him, and then he immediately is a dick to, like, these workers.
Well, he takes 8 bong rips. He has 3 cups of chamomile tea. He's talking about how professional he is. Then his workers come with their yield.
Yeah, he's like, I'm just a new businessman. Like, here I am selling my product that is weed. Yeah, I have to drink chamomile tea and take all my bong rips. Yeah, and then the workers come in.
1 second later, the workers arrive. Absolutely. He's not the professional chamomile drinker he pretends
to
be.
No, he's a total
dick
to them.
Yeah.
And he's a white guy and he's a dick to these like migrant farm workers. And you're like, you need to.
So they're pretty justified when they throw a rock through his window.
Yeah. So then he's like a second later. That's also like, that's a great part of the documentary because it's very relatable seeing somebody who's like clearly very stressed out be like, I'm going to smoke more weed and this will solve the problem.
Yes.
So he does like 5 more. He's like, I guess I better take a big bong rip now to chill out. Ha ha. And he like does all these bong hits compulsively. And then he just makes him more paranoid and weird. And then they throw a rock through his window. Because he, like, blames them for his crop getting screwed up. And they're like, it's not our fault that, like, mold grew on your crop. And he's like, yeah, it is. I'm not paying you anything. It's gross.
It's super gross.
So his name is, like, Jeff Dookie.
It's either Jeff or Mike or exactly that kind
something
of
ilk. Like, and he's like, it's the Dookie Brothers Weed Company.
Yeah.
Ugh. So he is another character. And then there are these 2 women who are just like local yokels who seem really cool.
Well, they're one of them, she died before the documentary was completed or was made. So it's her friend talking. Her name was Sherry, who died. And then her friend is kind of talking about how Sherry got interested in the missing persons case and kind of took it on herself to go sticking her nose where it didn't belong.
Mm-hmm. And they look like real... like just Dust Bowl.
Love it.
Love it. Like those photographs of women in the Dust Bowl where you're just like, people have just been living in like their mouths are just a line.
Yep.
They all look real craggy, we were saying. Everybody in this documentary kind of looks like a redwood.
Do you think it's the altitude?
I don't know. It's also the style.
I'm kind of embracing that style.
The women all looked really cool. There were a couple of women they show. There's this one woman who's a grower who's so cool.
Are you talking about pink hair?
Yeah,
oh,
she seemed like really cool, right?
Yeah.
And then there was like another woman who they kept showing who had kind of like a big sunglasses and...
Oh, yeah. So that's the missing person's aunt, I believe. Yeah.
She seemed also... I was like, ooh, what is her vibe?
A lot of interesting faces.
Just some good like kind of California weird archetypes. And then all these bros in like board shorts and Volcom hats who are the new generation of weed growers.
Do you think that in 30 years we'll look back on that and be like, look how charming and cool these guys are?
I will never find it charming and cool because it's like too...
It has. There's something you can't put your finger on.
I have a high tolerance for like pop punk and like SoCal, but even I have a point where I'm like, that's too much SoCal.
Hey, folks. If you love true stories about extraordinary life experiences, we think you'll love the Risk podcast. Risk is the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share, stories too uncensored for public radio. On Risk, nothing's too intimate or too strange, like the one about the guy who got kidnapped by the drug cartel, or the girl who discovered she was living with a cannibal, or the woman who learned the person she was sharing kinky fantasies with online was her dear old dad. You'll hear real people sharing about life experiences so funny, so scary, so mystifying, you won't believe your ears. Find it all at riskshow.com or just search on your podcast app for Risk. That's R-I-S-K exclamation point or risk-show.com. What's also really interesting is just kind of being in Los Angeles for this wild ride of weed legalization, you really cannot know what to feel guilty about if you partake in the business of weed.
For sure, yeah.
Well, this will make you feel
this
guilty.
This documentary doesn't even really go into, like, it talks about the war on drugs a little bit, but it's like, it's a pretty white documentary. So
it's an extremely white documentary.
So they don't even talk. It's like some of these people being like, oh, yes, we were just outlaws growing our weed and like living our lives. It's like.
Well, that honestly, I felt as though the just how white it was kind of told its own story. I felt like it was intentional of just the threat of what happens to you if you're a white person in California getting in trouble for weed is very different than you know, otherwise.
So it doesn't even really go into that. It's just sort of about like the specificity of like the Humboldt weed market. And then it's like, it's all like crazy, like white meth heads with guns. And it's terrifying.
It is.
Because Murder Mountain.
You hear gunshots constantly.
That's what they show you. It's like Murder Mountain is just like a bunch of crazy, tweaked out people with weed farms and shotguns. And they talk a lot about like everybody's like, oh, here's my gun. Just got my gun out. Like, like somebody shoots somebody later on in the documentary, spoiler alert, just because they're like, oh, he took his gun out like he always does. And the other guy was like tweaking out and thought it was a threat. So he shot him in the face. And you're like, that probably happens a lot.
Yeah.
Everybody's really paranoid because they're like trying to grow a crop that like if it fails, they're going to go broke.
And there's a lot of like looting. Also, it was very painful to me to see the archival footage of the police in the I think it was 1983 was when they started using helicopters to find the farms. And the police would just come down and just harvest all the weed and light it on fire. And it just was so unbearably stupid. Anyway, good documentary.
No, I mean, I think also like the war on drugs stuff, again, just to like put that stuff in historical context, especially now that they're like repealing weed or making weed legal to be like, but look what also we did to people who sold weed. And so that's the thing in the documentary, too, is sort of like the police trying to deal with like, well, now it's legal, so we have to help them. And then they're suddenly sort of interested in helping solve the case.
There was at least one ex-law enforcement officer who expressed remorse about what had happened during the 80s drug bust and like how he had kind of been complicit in driving up the cost of weed and like making it a really unstable, whereas before it had been kind of just like this, you know, community of farmers who were trying to make enough money to live off of, but had turned it into this kind of like race of just greedy people and this influx of
new they keep
people.
Talking about the green rush.
Yeah, the green rush.
It's like the gold rush for weed. And they also talk a lot about like all these stupid people come through all the time thinking they're going to like make all this money growing weed and like that's who disappears.
Yeah.
It's a fun ride.
It is.
6 episodes.
But you know what was not a fun ride?
What?
I tried to force Molly to read this really good essay. It's a little, it's from a little while ago, but I recently came across it. I think it was in long form from Outside Magazine, written by a woman whose father was lost at sea. He wanted to take a solo trip. He was going from Puerto Vallarta to the Marquesas, and 26 days into his solo journey, he lost his mind, is what they think happened. Either he lost his mind or he was captured by pirates, but he was never found. And it's a really, really great article. It's by Allie Carr Troxell. And her dad's boat was the Celebration. I think that he, even his blog from when he was like kind of maybe before he set off is still online.
But, scary.
You know, I know. And it's interesting. He was a retired psychologist. And part of what's really interesting is her kind of reflection on growing up and the fact that she felt as though he kind of like later in life was pretty open about the fact that he had like gone after this like white collar career and had the kids and had the house and like he'd always just really wanted to be an adventurer. And so finally he got to an age where he was like, it's now or never. And everyone in his family was kind of like, please don't. Feel a solo journey of that length. I don't even know like how far he planned to go because the whole essay just overwhelms me.
Well, that's like you're like have somebody else on board who knows how to do that.
Yeah, but I think the whole point for him was that it was like this, you know, odyssey that he was gonna like really test himself. And he started sending the weird texts, and they're all riddled with misspellings, and they just seem to be leaping all over the place. Being kidnapped by film company. Deep South black cult took over steering, ship disabled, being kidnapped by pirates and telling, you know, sending out SOS signals, telling his family to cancel the SOS signals. In his log, he had talked about on previous voyages, like how he had hallucinated. So then I started looking into this more. There's a good Vice article about this guy named Josh Marsh, who was lost at sea off the coast of Manila for, I think, 52 hours. which, like, in the scheme of things doesn't seem that long, but he went through it. It was really, really cold. The tour guide jumped off the ship and went to swim for help and drowned. I guess, like, his first instinct, Josh's first instinct was to drink a bunch of rum and then was like, oh, no, what have I done? But he had, the like, hallucinations. He saw, like, cars and marinas. He thought that he was approaching a port, so he like, kind of wanted to, like, jump and swim. He thought it was close enough, and then he would kind of realize there was nothing there.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of a psychologist going crazy is obviously just scary. I've been watching a lot of Naked and Afraid, as I may have said on this podcast.
Yes.
Which I've been saying is, like, a great show because it's about people that think they'll be good survivalists, and some of them are even very experienced survivalists. And every episode I've watched, they're all, like, white people with tribal tattoos. And then they get into nature, and they are immediately, by, like, day two, they start going crazy.
Yeah.
It's amazing because it makes you realize how fragile.
Well, I think what's interesting about Naked and Afraid, especially when compared with one of my favorite shows, Alone, which I always talk about and still can't convince anyone else.
I'll watch Alone. Well, Alone is your alone.
That's
which is
what I'm
scarier
saying.
Than Naked and Afraid, where you have to work with a partner.
I think Alone on one season did something where it was two either family members or close friends or whatever, and they went and then kind of split off for part of it and then got together. And it actually seemed much more difficult than when they were completely isolated, because I think not having a big group of people where you can kind of get a break from someone who's driving you nuts, but, you know, just having this one person, especially on Naked and Afraid, where it's a stranger, a person of the opposite sex, and you're naked, adds a layer of, like, if you get the willies and you just don't like the way someone's relating to you, it probably makes you crazy because you just want to, like, kill them. Not literally.
You're such an only child. You're like, I'd rather be alone in the woods.
I would. I wouldn't rather be alone on a ship. Although when I think about if you're on a ship for, you know, however long, 20 days and you're
running
out of
food.
What's
the longest you've ever been on a ship?
Like an hour and a half. Not long.
Have you ever, so you know, done a cruise?
No.
Has Emily ever done a cruise? I feel like this has come up. We must know next time.
I don't know. It's, I've been tempted. Know. Back in the day when we were working at Grantland, I felt like there were occasional PR emails of, like,
a cruise.
Some kind
There's
of sponsored
cruise.
There's
a lot of PR
cruise.
Emails for a cruise. Again, you're like, yeah, yeah, that's how David Foster Wallace wrote that. Is
exactly.
Like, you're like, I can get someone to send me on a cruise.
Yeah.
Maybe.
What could go wrong?
Everything.
Everything can go wrong. And then there was the poop cruise, the notorious poop cruise. There have been a lot of really strong...
Someone close to me got very ill on a cruise and then was on the cruise for, like, several...
Well, that's the deal.
Several days being very sick, and there's, like, nothing you can do because there's not a real doctor on the ship. You
Is
just
there
kinda
not?
Wait it out. I mean, there's, like, a doctor, but, like...
There's not a hospital.
Or, like, maybe it's, like, a nurse on the ship. Yeah, you're just kind of, like...
There needs to be a doctor on the ship.
You can't go home.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Unless
no,
it's real
horrible.
Bad. Maybe then you dock and fly somewhere.
I've gotten seasick before. I mean, I'm a fragile flower when it comes to travel.
So maybe just the ocean, you're not taken to the ocean.
Well, I had no idea how quickly you could lose your mind on a boat.
That's what Naked and Afraid makes me feel like, is just how quickly you can lose your mind without resources like water and food, obviously.
Naked and Afraid was kind of floated with the hook of the people were going to end up making out because they were naked. Initially, when Naked and Afraid came out,
well, that's what it implies.
It was heavily implied.
Naked. They're naked, but it's cool
naked and
it
afraid
shows
to
how
be alone.
Quickly desexualized nudity becomes in those circumstances, or like any circumstances, if everybody's naked. It's just sort of normal quickly.
Right.
Like at the commune, man.
Yeah. Although this is obviously different because it's for a reality show.
Yeah.
So you're naked on TV.
But you also see, like, that's the thing. Yeah. You're like, is anyone ever going to make out? And then it's like, no, because, like, sex goes down the hierarchy of needs so quickly when you haven't, like, eaten, slept, or had any water.
Yeah.
And that, I guess, also would happen on a ship. All you would be thinking about is water. If you can't have water and there's water everywhere.
And not a drop to drink. I know.
I, for some reason, I think because we were talking about ship cats not that long ago. Then I was reading about, there's like a whole section about maritime fiction. And it was all like nautical fiction, a men's genre. Written
what?
About men at the sea. Yeah, and I was
that's
like, oh, yeah, that's kind of true. If I think about it, like all the books about the ocean are about men in the sea.
It's funny because the ocean is so obviously a woman.
Right?
You know?
And also, like, women like to be at the sea.
Yeah, look at Moana.
Moana loves to be in the sea. Did you ever read True Confessions of Charlotte Doyle?
Oh, you bet I read True Confessions of Charlotte Doyle. Yeah.
The one book that gets mentioned is like nautical fiction about women. So more women on ships.
Yeah.
More, well, I guess actually.
More doctors. More women doctors on ships.
The Cardi B and City Girls Torque video that was like a ship entirely filled with women. And I really enjoyed that aspect of it, especially.
Yeah, I'd go on them. My mom, when she was a kid, went on a lot of cruises, and it was the first time she'd ever eaten an avocado.
Ooh.
Was on a cruise.
Was it like full of shrimp cocktail, probably?
It may have been.
That's what
it
I imagine probably. All 50s food being like.
Cruises back then exist in this kind of
Does
mythical
she have
travel
fond
thing.
Memories of the cruise?
Oh, for sure.
She thought of it as like
But
a
she glim- also has fond memories of flying because as oh, every person
glamorous.
Over a certain age, we had stairs and a piano and everyone was smoking. And it's, I'm
Wait,
like,
where
great.
Was, where was the piano?
It was up in the piano bar. Your parents didn't tell you this story. It had stairs, it had a piano, and everyone was smoking.
The everyone was smoking thing comes up a lot because when Mad Men was on, they would just
exactly.
be like, it's so true. Like, people don't know how much everyone was smoking all the time. And I was like, we don't even know because we grew up in California mostly. Like,
I was not, I was in the car with the rolled up windows.
Do you remember being like a child in New York where everybody was smoking inside still?
Yes, of course. I used to lecture people about smoking. When I was a kid, because it was like, I guess that it wasn't newly discovered to be horrible for you, but they were really drumming it into our heads in school. And so I would roll up little scrolls that said, like, stop smoking, it's killing you, and put it in people's cigarette packs. And then eventually, one of my parents' friends was like, you know,
your daughter's
super obnoxious.
Your daughter's an eco-terrorist.
Yeah.
And you were like, yeah, I know.
Like,
it's
yeah,
cool, actually.
The irony. but yeah, I was really hung up on the idea of stairs on airplanes because I remember being a kid getting on an airplane and being like, where would the stairs go?
Like up to the airplane? Like you go out to the tarmac?
No, it's like, this was a legendary thing. Who knows if it was
in
the plane?
Like a double-decker plane?
We need a fact check. Everyone was like, there's stairs. You go
I've taken the stairs up to the
No,
plane
no, of course.
Burbank.
This is an inside.
You walk out on the tarmac.
Inside stairs, Molly.
So it's like a magic, like just a giant like yacht in the sky plane.
Yes.
And then also just a cruise being glamorous is very funny to think about. But also, like, that does sound lovely. Just like train travel.
Oh, I love trains.
Old train
it's
travel.
The only way to go, man.
I love trains.
I'm
trains.
So over flying
Sponsor
now.
Night call.
Oh, please. Amtrak, Acela Express. Did you ever take the Acela?
Yeah, all the time. It was great. I loved
the
it.
The Acela.
What a lovely train.
Yeah, I know.
My mom, who finds flying a little scary, always has to think of it. She thinks of it as a train in the sky. And that's what I do.
Isn't the trouble the in the sky part just
yeah, but
ruins
if you just,
the illusion?
If you just pretend you're on a train in your mind, it's like you think less about it being in the sky.
I'm always saying to people that I think it's going to be considered so ludicrous in like 10 years, we're going to be telling people about what flying was like now. And they're just going to refuse to believe that people spent thousands of dollars
You
for
don't
this
think it'll
experience.
Just get worse and worse?
I don't think it can. At this point, granted, I'm like an extremely neurotic person, but I'm so close to just saying I won't do it anymore because, I mean, especially even in the past year, every day there's a new report of a horrible thing that happens on a flight and everyone's just like, you have no option. What are you going to do? And we're like, yeah, you're right. But I'm starting to think maybe
well,
I don't need to go anywhere.
Well, that's why we're
going to
bring back train travel.
Let's do it.
And also other options, like maybe the Pony Express will come back.
I feel so bad for a horse. I'm going to walk so far.
What if we get robotic horses, Westworld?
I'm down with that.
Yeah.
I could do that.
Robotic Pony Express.
Yeah. But I want to hear your opinion about the trends in food.
Oh, yeah.
I've been stewing on this.
Well, maybe we could take the Robotic Pony Express up to San Francisco sometime and explore other trends in food.
I would love to. The number of people I've lied to in my life being like, San Francisco is beautiful and I love it.
I love
I've been
how
there
you
lots
danced
of time.
Around it for so long.
I haven't been to Northern California except the places I've been to in Northern California.
I've never been to Seattle and you've been there.
Again, it was so brief.
You've also
Does
been to Portland,
count?
Where I've never been.
I really liked Portland.
Going there in the spring for the first time.
Are
Night
you?
Night Call, Oregon.
Congratulations. I'm so excited.
We would like to traverse all of the western provinces.
Yeah, we would.
The food trends of today and tomorrow. Food moods. Food Mood. Food Mood.
What is your prediction? You had a prediction.
Well, first, you should tell your take about what's going out of style.
Okay, I have noticed that every store that is opening and seemingly bustling is a pokey restaurant.
Still?
I mean, I can't believe it's still going on, but I feel like I passed three of them, and it's such a specific food
trend. I feel like
trend.
The bubble has burst.
I don't know. There's nothing against it, but I can't even believe it went on this long, and every time I see a new one opening, I'm just like, you must think twice about
this. I feel like
it
succeeded yogurt as the trend.
I think that there was something else before yogurt. Well, I always think of Chipotle falling prey to its own E. coli, you know, as
anything
being
that
interesting...
expands too quickly and yeah. Suddenly there's a million of them. There's so many poke places that I can't believe they all stay in business. I was thinking we'd be at the, like, they're all being shuttered and the, like,
that's what I'm saying. It's shocking.
Roll through. Do you like poke?
I used to, but now on principle, I can't.
You're like, there's too much.
Too much of it. It's weird to see. It's
well,
like,
I think it's interesting for it to happen at a time when it's also like overfishing is
that's
bad.
What I, yeah, it's, I mean, it just doesn't seem sound and it also seems dangerous to me to rely on.
To play fish roulette?
Yeah, to play fish roulette.
I love to play fish roulette. I know that it's bad, but I just will eat. I'll eat the poke wherever.
It's not just fish. It's like a specific set. But I'm like, trying to think of something that the specificity is similar to, and I'm just coming up with like cream-based soups or something where you could not eat it every day.
It's weird when anything becomes super crazy popular, like kale becoming a food trend
is
the biggest scam of the century because it's just like greens.
It's just chewy spinach. There's nothing magical about kale.
It's just like a tough green. Mm-hmm. Fine, but it's weird for it to be in everything.
Yeah, it is.
It would, and then there's nothing has come in its wake that has been as much of a sensation.
Not as hyped, except for the Hatch chilies at Gelson's.
I remember I was working at Trader Joe's when kale hit, and it was like right before that, it was aloe juice was the big thing.
Oh, yeah, aloe juice. Aloe juice is also a very strange. I like aloe juice on occasion.
It's slippery. It cleans out the insides, I believe.
Does. Well, it's like a jello shot.
But yeah, that was like everybody was buying that, and then all of a sudden it was just like kale, 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 yeah. And then never anything else ever again. But
we're also coasting into the oat. It's just the oat milk.
The oat milk dynasty. I don't know who big oat milk is paying, but it has taken over all the other milks so quickly. I love when they like shame you at the coffee shop for like not knowing about the new milk yet.
Do they do that? I always get regular milk.
I always get the alternative milk. But I remember when it was like places where I ordered soy milk, they'd be like, sorry, we only have almond milk.
Almond milk is
just
not thick
enough.
And now
they're like, sorry, we only have oat milk.
Oh, they only have oat milk? Is oat milk ridiculously expensive?
I mean, it's the same as other alternative milks.
I heard that cashew milk is really good.
Cashew milk is pretty good.
None of these milks excite me.
Are bad. They're all bad for the environment because it takes a lot of water to grow the nuts.
What do you think would be an alternative to the nuts to make milk out of?
Well, I think about this all the time because I love milk and I'm lactose intolerant. So,
if you could drink any kind of regular, like, whole milk?
Oh my
person?
God, this brings me to the food trends.
Okay,
to the new food trends. Okay, so I got really into milk tea, which is the generic flavor of tea you get with boba tea. It's been around for a long time. It's not new because I always ordered other flavors of boba tea. I never thought to order just like the regular flavor. It's essentially kind of like a Thai iced tea style, like condensed milk and a lot of sugar and then tea. But it is everywhere. You can get it everywhere.
Yeah.
It's like it's having a boom time for sure. There's
it's
like
having
a million
a moment.
New boba tea places opening. I remember the original boba wave. I'm not big into bobas themselves.
Yeah, I don't like the chewy bobas.
But the tea.
It's like giant caviar.
I've gotten really into the tea. It gets you so spracked.
Yeah.
And then I found out that it's basically always vegan.
What?
Because a lot of these places use coconut milk.
Oh.
So like, for example.
Like coconut cream, really.
Yeah, coconut cream.
Yeah, that's
so like,
the stuff.
Because it's really good and it's got really good texture and coconut cream is probably like not the health. It's definitely not the healthy
it's,
milk.
Have you ever bought coconut cream?
It's so good though.
It's so good.
And it's technically non-dairy, so milk tea, Milk tea is my number one.
I used to get the Coco Lopez, which is the can of coconut cream that used to make piña coladas.
No, it's so good.
It's so good. If you look at the back of the can, you're like, wow.
Whatever.
It's just incredible. I was awed by it. I was like, that's pretty impressive. That's not a big can.
You know what? Everyone call in tonight, call.
Give us a call if you have thoughts about alternative milks, old school milks, or food trends. Our number is 240-46-NIGHT, or you can email us at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, do you guys like milk tea? I turned to it as an alternative to coffee, and then I had to cut back on milk tea because it's too delicious. It's like very delicious and caffeinated and much cheaper than most coffee.
I'm confused because I just wonder why nobody's coming up with like just kind of a particulate matter that can lend a creaminess to water.
A particulate matter.
Well, I'm just like, is there nothing that we're throwing away that could be repurposed for making an alternative milk instead of having to grow a lot of nuts?
I think the truth about almond milk is that if you made something that was just like water and you colored it white and you were like, it's a new milk, people would drink it. It'd be fine.
I'm kind of like, would it be terrible if it were made from paper? It would be. No, I think it's a bad idea.
No, you know what?
I think that might kill you.
There's paper in a lot of stuff.
There is paper in a lot of stuff.
There's paper is a filler in like so much food.
What about like the husks of corn? What about corn milk? You know when you kind of boil the husks,
corn
and you boil
silk
the
milk.
Corn.
Oh, we like use the corn silk.
You use the whole corn.
We use the silk. We're like, you know, the silk that people just throw away. We turn it into milk.
It's silk milk. Well, there already is silk milk.
And then our spiders, cows are spiders.
Yeah. I'm so.
I feel like there was somebody who was like using spiders to make milk.
This you could use insects to make milk. You could do it. You could do it.
Don't. What
spiders
about
spiders are going to take
what
over
about
anyway?
That weird milk that comes out of plants sometimes?
There's milkweed. Milkweed. Now we're tying together our first topic and our last topic.
Someone's going to call it and be like, milkweed is poisonous. If you drink it, you die.
Yeah, it's only good for butterflies, monarch butterflies.
I think it is maybe poisonous.
Murder on Milkweed
Here,
Mountain.
Murder on Milkweed Mountain. The butterflies are disappearing. It's the other food trend. I don't have the name of the place because I was just walking around in Koreatown and I observed a very long line for a place. It was at California Marketplace, which is a grocery store. And then there's like a mall on top of it. Mm-hmm. Have you ever been there?
Yes.
It's great.
I think. Maybe with you.
It is great. But there was a mall on top of it, like a place that had just opened. And there was like many places that all looked good. But this one place had the line like around the block. So I had to see what it was.
What was it?
It was corn dogs.
Oh, I love corn dogs.
Corn dogs are the new food trend. And
calling it now.
No, it's a thing. It's like, I think a Korean food trend that we are just now getting in America. It is not just dogs. A lot of it is like a fried cheese stick.
Oh, I don't know about that.
I think you might like it.
I was going to say, what if it had a like crab cake underneath?
Seafood corn dog is a thing. But yeah, check out the corn dog boom. Night call. You heard it here first. Corn dogs are the new poke.
Nice.
We are going to go to San Francisco and we are going to get you what I got last time I was there, which is the 1980s hottest food trend, clam chowder in a bread bowl.
I'm so down. That's my favorite
thing.
So
good.
Thanks for listening this week. We'll be back next week. Again, if you have anything you'd like to share, we're Free Jazz Pod. So you can call on whatever, 240-46-NIGHT or nightcallpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, please give us a call or a night text to that number even, or an email, and tell us about what your thoughts are on trendy beverages, trendy food things that you like or don't like. Tell us about your haunted dreams.
And we will be seeing some of you hopefully in a couple of days at our night call event at Gold Diggers Bar on February 5th at 10 p.m.
It'll be one day as of DJing. The day this podcast comes out. It'll be tomorrow.
Oh, you're right. Tomorrow. Clear your calendars.
Come
we will
tomorrow.
Be there.
February 5th, 10 p.m. at Gold Diggers. We'll be playing the hits. Probably some Steely Dan.
Definitely some Steely Dan.
Probably some ELO.
Definitely some ELO.
Tess and I will be playing all the cool big chill hits. Emily is bringing some records. I think we might represent all the different forms of streaming media in our DJ sets.
Including phone.
Yeah.
Vinyl.
Phone, vinyl.
And other.
And other.
Yeah.
CDJs.
It's the Holy Trinity.
The Holy Trinity.
Of music.
Pour out a little clam chowder for us.
We'll see you soon.
See you soon.